We're on Daf Samach Gimel Amid Beis, and we're in the middle of the Daf. We're going to start with Omer of Nachman, and this Gemara is about Leitzonus, which is normally forbidden, but in the exceptional case of Avodah Zorah, we'll find in Tanakh that the Nevi'im made fun and mockery of Avodah Zarah, certain famous idols that were located in various places. And Rav Nachman's language is, and you'll see this five lines down from the wide lines, Omer Rav Nachman, Kol Leitzanus Asira, any kind of cynical comments and joking around to make fun of somebody or something is forbidden. Chutz mi Leitzanusa Davodas Kocham Desharia. And the impression you get is that in the case of Avodah Zarah, Nachman is saying that it's even a mitzvah to follow in the footsteps of the Tanakh and make fun of idols. And now he's going to go ahead and prove this from Psukim in Yeshayo Anovi, in Hoshea, in Zechariah Anovi, etc., and in Melachim. I just want to make a comment as we enter into this sugya that the most important thing that we could take out of the sugya, I think, is not the leitzonus for Avodah Zarah, but rather the fact that other leitzonus is also. And we just finished Yom Kippur yesterday, in which we had an alchet and a special ashamnu about latznu, about alchet shechatanu lefanecha beleitzonus. And that's something that we should keep in mind. So the part about making fun of Avodah Zarah, I think, is less relevant in our time, and we'll see why in the Gemara. But I think what is relevant, the ethical message that we should take, is to be careful about Leitzonus, which Kol Leitzonus Asira, Rav Nachman says, Leitzonus, mockery in general, is forbidden. Now, the first pasuk he brings is Kara Bel Kores Nevo. And it would seem that the word kara here in this pasuk means to splash. And the name of the Avodah Zarah is called Baal Kores and Nevo. And you get the impression that Baal Kores and Nevo are two separate idols. And the pasuk goes on to say that Korsu Karu Yachtov Lo Yachlu Malet Masa. Together, these two idols are involved in number one, Kara in Kriya, and number two, in Karas. Now, both of these are very similar. Kara is to squat, and Karas is to splash. In the end of the pasuk, after describing these two idols as splashing and squatting, is that lo yuchlu malet masa, they could not deliver the burden. And this is explained by Rashi here and in Tanakh as an allusion to the fact that they squat to defecate. So this is very degrading to the idol. And it says about the idol that the tzoah comes out splashing uncontrollably. This is a way of ridiculing the Avodah Zarah. Then there's another pasuk uksiv. This already is in Hoshea. Le'eglos beis oven yaguru shchein. And where is this? Let's see. Le'eglos, it says dibru le'eglos beis oven, and the eglos, an agola or an egla, is a calf, which is a young cow, a baby cow. And this baby cow is in a place called Beis Oven. And Beis Oven in Melachim Aleph is a reference to Beis El. Now Beis El, on the one hand, is of course the house of God, and it's called Beis Oven. Beis Oven is a house of wickedness. And this has to do with these calves of Yerucham, I meant to say Yerovam. He was the king that not only did he worship idols, he had the Jewish people worship idols. And he placed these two idols, one calf in Basel, the other was in Dan. But the principal and the most important worship was in Basel. And these are referred to by the Tanakh as the calves of Beis Oven. Oven meaning wickedness, as we said before. And look how the Pasuk in Hosea describes this. Ki ovel olav amo uchmorav olav yagilu. The literal translation is that the inhabitants of Shomron will be afraid, for its nation will mourn over it, but its priests will rejoice over it. And the Navi seems to be foretelling the destruction of this idol, of this calf. And the nation is going to mourn the loss. Now, who's going to destroy, or at least obfuscate with these calves? It's going to be Sancheriv Melech Ashur. And he's going to take the calves into exile when Ashur conquers the Shomron, which is the northern part of Israel. Now, the people of Israel will mourn the loss of its glory. Now, the glory of the people is this calf. However, the priests who administer these calves will rejoice. And the Gemara is going to try to clarify exactly why the priests will rejoice when Sancheriv will carry these calves after the conquering of Shomron into exile. And the Pasuk says, Al kvodo ki gola mimenu, which literally translates, for its glory that is departed from it. And the Gemara says, Al tikri kvodo el kvedo, right? The word kvod, which has four letters to it, it can be interpreted in two different ways. It's either glory or it's heavy. It's a burden. And in this case, what the Navi is saying is about these eglos, these calves, that their buttocks are extremely heavy because of the load of feces that they contain. So that the priests who administer to this idol will be very happy that they no longer have to carry that burden any longer. Now in truth, as Rashi and the Marsha point out, these calves are inanimate. These are idols. They are images made of metal or stone. They don't actually literally produce excrement. But the Pasuk uses this kind of figurative speech to refer to the calves in a derogatory way. But the purpose of this Pasuk is to tell us that the idolatry that was served for these idols caused an unbearable degree of weight, of spiritual weight, of excrement, of corruption. And again, all these psukim tell us that it's virtuous to make a mockery of idols. Omrab Yitzchak Mai Dechsiv. And now we're taking a look at the practice of idolatry during the earlier periods of Jewish history. Mai dechsiv, what does it mean when it says in Hosea, Ata Yosifu Lachto? In other words, they sin even more. And this is in the days of Yehu, who was the king of Israel. And at that time, the Jews of the northern kingdom sin even more than they did at the time of Yehoravam and Achav. Vayasu lehem masecha mikaspam. They made idols, images out of silver. Kisvunam atzabim. okay, in the shape of idols. My kisvunam atzavim. What did the pasuk add here by saying in the shape of idols? Melamed shekol echad v'echad aso dmus yir aso. Everyone had their own little getchka, their own little image, and that was his personal deity. Umenicho bekiso, and he kept it in his purse. Bishasha zochra, as long as he would remind himself of it, motzio mitocheko mechabko menashka, he would take it out of his chest where he put it, and he would kiss it and hug it. Such was the love for the idols. My, what does the pasuk mean? Again in Hosea, Zovche Odom Agolim Yishakun. Literally, those who slaughter people will kiss the calves. And no doubt that these calves are the calves of Avodah Zarah. Om Rabbi Yitzchak, Debe Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Yitzchak, from the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Ami, said, Shall you mishar say, Avodas Kochavim Nosnim Einem Bebali Mamon? Those priests who were in charge of administering the idol worship would set their eyes upon the wealthy people, and specifically the possessions of the wealthy people, and they would dream up a ploy, a way of acquiring ownership over the wealth of the wealthy people. And what was their scheme? Mar even esha golim. Now at this point we see that the Gemara is shifting from idols that were made of lead or other metals and were located in Beis El and Dan to people worshipping actually live calves. In other words, the case of Egel Azov is not a fluky kind of case from the perspective of Avodah Zarah. The idol and the calf is common. But here we're talking about live calves and people who worship live calves. This is something that, you know, that reminds us of Mitzrayim already. The Osim Dmus Atzavim, they would make an image of the wealthy people. This required a great deal of professional artwork to sculpture an image of the wealthy people. Mamida Mitzad Avusehen, and it was placed near the calves in such a way that the calves, the troughs of the calves, that's where they ate and drank, and that would be a way where the calves would get a look at the face of these wealthy people through the images. Umotzian Osan Lachut, when they take the calves out, the calves would go looking for those people that they became familiar with. That's the kisvunam atzavim, in the shapes of human figures. Umotzian Osan Lachutz, Kevan Shero Osan Ratzin Achreim Mashvashim Bahem. And when the calves would see, identify those people, they would run after them and nuzzle themselves up to them. In a sense, they wanted to have a kind of a close relationship with them. It's like a dog who, you know, nuzzles with his owner. Omrim, at that point, the priests would turn to the wealthy people in Omrimlo, and they would say to him, to the wealthy person, Avodas kocham chafetz b'cha, the idol desires you. Now, when an idol desires you, and you want to, you know, you want to satisfy the idol, because again, the idol now is a personality, it's not an animal anymore, it's a god, then you want to give yourself over to the idol. And the ultimate way of giving yourself to the idol is yavo v'yizbach atzmolo. Come and allow yourself to be slaughtered for the idol. And again, we can't even begin to imagine the power and the influence of idol worship, that a person, because this calf is indicating that he wants them, therefore he's going to have to give up his life, sacrifice his life. Now, I'm not sure what happens over here, but if you read the Gemara and you take it literally, it says that they would give up their life, they'd be willing to be slaughtered for the calf, and then the priests would take away their possessions. They would confiscate whatever monies they had. So this was all part of a ploy. The Mashoff was a slightly different pshat, that these people wouldn't want to slaughter themselves, have themselves slaughtered. They would redeem themselves by giving this massive amount of money and possessions over to the priests. Omar Rava. Rava's not so happy with the way this pshat fits into the pasuk. We started with the pasuk of Zovchei Adam Agolim Yishakun, about kissing the calves. And he says, hi, the way the pasuk is written is not the way you're interpreting it. Your interpretation, the pasuk would have been written the following way: Agolim Yishakun, the calves kiss, in this case, the wealthy person, and for what purpose? Lizbach Adam, Lizbach Adam. That's me, boy. That's what it should have said. Lizbach Adam, in order to get a person to slaughter himself. So the syntax of the pasuk is imprecise, because these priests told the wealthy people that the calf is kissing you because it wants you as a sacrifice. But the way it's written, that's what Rava says, implies that anyone who slaughtered a person would subsequently kiss the calf. Ela Omar Rava kol zavech es beno lavodes kol chavim. Omar lo, doron gadol hikriv lo, yovav yishak lo. Now, if a person slaughtered his son for this idol, then he would get rewarded, and he was offered this great gift. Once he offered this great gift to the idol of slaughtering his son, then he in turn got a wonderful opportunity. Yovav Yishaklo, he's allowed to come and kiss the idol. So it seems like Rav is back to the molten idol as opposed to the live calf. And we're talking about Zovech as Beno. Again, all these descriptions of Avodah Zarah make your hair stand on end. It's hard to believe. Now again, when Ashur conquered those parts of Eretz Yisrael, then there were various idols that became very popular, that were worshipped by the various nations, and we'll see each nation had its own particular idolatry, and this was going on in Eretz Yisrael itself. Now, you may remember that when Ashur conquered the northern part of Eretz Yisrael, the 10 tribes, that the Aseres HaShvatim, were sent into Golus, and various countries or nations came to replace the exiled Jews. There were the Bavliim and the Kutiim and other nations. Now they continued to worship idols that they had brought from their own indigenous idol worship, from wherever they came from. And the Gemara is going to interpret the Psukim here in Malachim and elsewhere, in the light of this introduction. Omar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Anshei Bavel Asu Esukos Benos. So the Anshei Bavel, who came to settle in Eretz Yisrael and brought with them their idols, which is called Sukos Benos. This is all the Malachim Beis. And the Gemara says, "My Ninu, what is this Sukos Benos? Tarnagolis. They worshipped a hen, or perhaps the image of a hen, the way Rashi interprets it. And the hen, in their language, is called Sukos Benos, which literally means hovering over daughters. And the hen protects its little chickens by hovering over the chicks. And that's called Benos, Sukos Benos. Next we have the Anshe Kus. These are the Kuthians, the Kutis. Osu es Nargel. They made an idol called Nargel. Umay Nihu. What was this image? Tarnagol. This was the male species. We had the Tarnagolas, which is the female. Now we have the Tarnagol, which is the male. And if you take a look at the word Nargel, you can break it up, and it's really forms the root of Tarnagol. Now, it's not clear to me why they, the Kusian, preferred a male to a female. After all, it was the female who was hovering over its young. The Anshe Hamas Osus Amish Ashima. The people who came from Hamas, they made an idol called Ashima. Umay Niu, and what is this idol? Barcha Karcha. It's a bald goat. Again, I don't know why all this, you know, a billy goat, all this infatuation with a goat. And then the pasuk goes on to say, again, we're all in Malachim Beis, Ve'ha'avim. That's those who came from Avi, the Avitites, Osu Nivchar Vies Tartok. They made two idols which are called Nivchaz and Tartok. Umaynu, and what did these look like? Kelev V'chamor. A dog and a donkey. Wild. Rashi says, and it's a little bit problematic, that the word Nivchan means a barker, and that's why it's a reference to a dog, but actually it says Nivchaz, not Nivchan in the Pasuk. So what, we don't understand that, Rashi. But Tamar Shah, in the name of the Radak, says that Nivchaz is really two words together, Navach and Chaz, which means a barker exposed. In other words, the dog bares its teeth when it barks, so it exposes its teeth. And Tartuk means a donkey. That's not at all clear why Tartuk is a donkey. Then we have another nation called Svarvim. And the Svarvim, Sorfim is Bneim Vespinosem Va'esh La'ad Ramelech V'Anamelech. Elohei Svarvim. So the gods of the Svarvim are the Adramelech and the Anamelech, and these were their gods, and they actually would burn their sons in the fire for the sake of these two gods. Now these gods are idols, and the Gemara wants to know, what did they look like? Every idol is an image of something. Umay Niu. Hapered Vasus, the mule and the horse. Imagine parents burning their children for the sake of a mule or a horse. Just mind-boggling. Not a real mule or a horse, I'm talking about an idol. Adramelech is a mule. Why? We analyze the word Adramelech. Tiadarle, it honors. Lemore, its master, Bita'ina, by carrying a burden. So that's what the mule is all about. It carries a burden. And this was an important animal which would glorify and honor its master, and therefore deserve somehow to be an idol. And then Anamelech is a horse. Di'anile lemare bekirba. Ani leads la note, to respond. Limari, to its master. Bikrova. Bikrova is in a battlefield. So the horse is the critical animal for the battlefield. And the horse will respond to its master. The Gemara says that you shouldn't get the misimpression that this terrible, I mean beyond words, practice of burning children at the stake for idols is something that's limited to the goyim, only they engaged in. Av Chizkiyahu melech Yehuda bikesh aviv lasos lo ken. Imagine, the father of Chizkiyahu melech Yehuda, Chizkiyahu was a great tzaddik, he wanted to offer his own son Chizkiyahu on the fires for the sake of the Sfarvim, who, as we said before, would burn their sons Tadramelech and Anamelech. And yet we know that Chizkiyahu survived. How did that happen? If his father wanted to have him burnt at the stake, Ela Shesokatu Imo, his mother somehow got a hold of a salve that would protect him from the fire, which is called Salamandra. And she was able to get the blood of the Salamandra and put it on his body. What is this Salamandra that its blood has this protective power? So this is some sort of a creature. Again, it looks like a salamander based on the word, that emerges from an oven in which a fire has burned for 7 consecutive years. And because of the heat of the fire, this creature that comes out has a blood that's immune to fire. And the mother of Chizkiyahu saves her son from the fire of Anamelech. I don't know if anyone could find today, you know, this salamandra. It would be a very good protection, maybe for astronauts or other people, firefighters. The Ramban, in his Pirush al Torah, says that this salamandra was created by Hashem specifically for the purpose of saving Chizkiyahu. So if that be the case, we probably don't even have it today. Now the Gemara goes on and says, in the name of Rav, Amar Rav Yudom Rav, Yodin ha-Yisrael b'avodas kochavim she'en ba mamish v'lo ovdu avodas kochavim el-lahati lehem arayis p'farheshir. Now, what's going on here is that Rav is describing the initial fall of the Jewish people for Avodah Zarah. And he says that initially they had no desire for Avodah Zarah. They just wanted to have this promiscuous lifestyle, to engage in arayos, even before Hesia, and in order to be matu that for them, they became Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And as a result, nobody would reprimand them or castigate them for this immorality, because they already were on, you know, were on a different plane, and they were already excluded from the Jewish community, or at least the observant Jewish community. Now the Gemara is going to go on an attack here to try to prove that in fact the Jewish people did actually love their idols. Masiv Rav Mesharshia asks from a pasuk in Yirmiyahu HaNavi, it says, "Kizkar b'neichem mizbochseichem." Their altars are like the remembering of their sons. V'yomer Rabbi Loza, what does this pasuk mean? Ka'adam she'yesh lo gaguim al b'no. Whenever they would remember or think about their altars or their idols, they would long for the idols and the altars like a father longs for his son who's gone away. Just the thought of the mizbechos and the avodah zarah would elicit that form of nostalgia, of longing. That's how much they love their idols. And the Gemara is going to give an answer now that it's going to repeat over and over with each barrage. Basa davikube. At some point later on, the Jewish people got attached to their idols. They got emotionally involved and began to love their idols. Initially, they only accepted the idol worship as a way of being matir arayos. But eventually, they fell in love with their idols. And that's called basa davikube. Toshma, the Gemara now quotes another source, a Brisa Torskona, to prove that they love their idols. V'nasati es pigrechem al pigre gilulechem. The pasuk in the Tochacha, at the end of of Vayikra and Parshas Bechukosai describes the carcass of a human being that's being thrown on the dead idol. That's going to happen in the future. And the Gemara now describes how that actually came to pass. Amru Elio Atzadik, this is probably during the period of destruction of the first temple at the hands of the Babylonians, and Elio is looking to see Machazal Tfuche Rav Sheb Yushalayim, if he could save anyone who's dying from hunger in Yushalayim. Because of the siege of Yushalayim, people are dying in the streets from hunger, their bellies were bloated from hunger. Pamachas Matza Tinok, he found a child with a bloated stomach who was thrust in a trash heap. Omalo Meza Mishpachata. He asks the child, from what family is Omalo Mishpacha Plonisani? I come from such and such a family. Omalo Klum Nishtaya Mi Osa Mishpacha. Are there any other survivors from this family? Omalo Lav Chutz Mimeni. I'm the only last survivor. And according to one version in the Brisa, Elio asks the child, how many were there in this family? And he replied, 3,000. So 2,999 had already perished, and this was the last member of the family that was alive. So Elio offers him the following. He says, Omer lo, im ani melamedcha dover shato chaybo, if I'm going to teach you and you'll accept my teaching and you'll survive, atalomed, are you willing to accept my teaching? Omer lo, hein. He said, yes, Omer lo, emar b'chol yom, recite on a daily basis, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. This is something that every Jewish child knows. Omer lo, and the child replied to him, and here we turn to Daf Samach Daled, Hus. That's what Kalev said when the Meraglim said their terrible things. Now he says, Hus, quiet down. Shalol Hazkir B'Shem Hashem. Like it's absolutely forbidden to mention the name of God. Shlo Limdo Ovi V'Imo. His parents had not taught him the name of God. Now again, if they didn't teach him the name of God, how did he know to shut up Elio when he said the name of God? Maybe they taught him the name of God, but as a, you know, as a foreign element. Miad Hotzi Yiroso Micheko. Immediately the child took out, sort of like to protect himself against the name of God, he took out his deity from his chest. Mechabka, he hugged it. Menashka, he kissed it. Anshenivka, kreso, and then he died. His abdomen burst. Vinofla Yiroso La'aretz. First he dropped the idol, and the idol fell to the ground. Vinofla Hu'olem, and then he fell on top. V'lekayim Mashenemar, and this is the pasuk that we mentioned earlier in Vayikra. V'nasati es pigrechem al pigrei Gilulechem. Your carcass will fall on the carcass of the idols. So we see clearly how much the Jews loved their idolatry and how dedicated they were. Here the child had a chance to save his life. And the Gemara again gives the same answer. Basa Daviku Bey, after a period of time, they, the Jewish people, became attached to their idol worship. So it started as a technical way of allowing a rias, and then at the end they embraced their idols. Toshma, we have another brisa that again indicates how much they loved their idols. Vayizaku b'kol gadol Hashem Eloheihem. The Anshei Knesset Gdola became so aware, as the Pasuk in Nehemiah testifies, that the people of Israel had fallen in love with their idols, that they had to do something. So they cried out to Hashem. My Omer, what did they say to God? Omer Rabbi Yehuda v'Itamar Rabbi Yonah's son, Baya Baya, woe, woe. In other words, they pleaded with God, somehow you have to destroy the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. The inclination of the people towards Avodah Zarah is too powerful, and it's gone amok, and there's no way of controlling it. And Chazal tell us, Habol Itayr Messiah Lo, the Anshei Knesset Gdola wanted to be purified, and they asked, they solicited divine intervention on behalf of the Jewish people to somehow purify the people of the evil inclination, the Avodah Zorah that was so powerful in their hearts for Avodah Zorah. Hainu di achrevei lebeisei. The Anshei Knesset HaGdol said to God that as a result of Avodah Zorah and this Yetzirah for Avodah Zorah, the house of God, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Again, one of the main reasons why the first Bais was destroyed was because of Avodah Zorah. The Kal Yolei Chola, and the Hechel was burnt down. The Katilna Litzdiki, Tzadikim were killed. The Aglinu Li Yisrael Me'arayu, and the Jews were exiled from their land. And that was at the end of the period of the first Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, at the beginning of the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, realized, Vadayinu Merakeid Beinam, literally the Avodah Zorah is still dancing amongst them, meaning their hearts are so saturated with this Yetzirah for Avodah Zorah that it still persists, even after the Churban. So we're not really in much better shape than we were before. Vadayinu Merakeid Beinam. Klum Yahavite Lon? Why did you create this Yetzirah? Elo Lekabule Beagra, to make it challenging, and he who overcomes the challenge will be rewarded, because there's no freedom of choice unless there's an evil inclination. Is lo iu beinan velo agri beinan. We don't want the evil inclination, we don't want the reward for overcoming inclination, because the inclination is so strong towards idol worship that we have no way of defeating it. This reminds us of the Gemara about Rav Blozi. He said that I don't want Yisurim and not the Yisurim and not the Schar that I'll get for Yisurim. Bosa Davikube. Again, the Gemara answers that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola were facing a situation as the period of history of idol worship amongst the Jewish people developed, and it got to the point where they loved their idols, and therefore there was no way that the Jewish people would survive this unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu would somehow allow the destruction of this temptation. Yosfu Tolasa Yom HaTanisa, after 3 days and three nights of consecutive fasting, and Chazal tell us that 3 days and three nights is the period that is able to successfully achieve divine mercy. Bo Rachmi, they prayed, and as a result of this fasting and their prayers, Hashem said that I have a message for you. Nafalahu pitka mirkia. A note fell down from the heavens. Da'aviksiv be'emes. And there was one word that was written on this note, and that was the word emes, which means that Hashem approved of this initiative to eliminate the Yetzer. And now, the right moment, the ace ratzon was to eliminate the Yetzer. Om Rab Chanina, Shmamina, this is on the side, Chos Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes, the seal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is truth, and therefore when any king, a human king, Lahavdil, wants to approve of something, some sort of a document, he applies his seal to the document. Here the word truth is God's seal of approval. He approved the initiative of, and the prayers of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. Nafak Kiguria denura mibei kodshe kadoshim. The Yetzirah appears, again, the people didn't understand what they were looking at, but from the Kodesh Kadoshim comes out an image that looked like a fiery lion cub. Amaluhu Navi li Yisrael. And Zechariah, who was the Navi at the time, the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, turns to Klal Yisrael and they say, you know what this image symbolizes, this fiery cub, Hainu Yitzra Avodah Zorah, that is the evil inclination that pulls us towards idol worship. Bahadi de Kotafsile, they tried to grab it, but Ishtamit Bein Se Mine, and they only grabbed onto a hair that came off. The Ozil Kalya Biarba Mea Parsi started crying. This lion cub started screaming. Its voice traveled and could be heard from a distance of 400 parsos. Now keep in mind that a pars is 4 mil, a mil is 2,000 amma. So a pars is 8,000 amma. And now we're talking about a distance of 400 parsas. So you multiply 400 by 8,000 amos, you get 3,200,000 amos. That's an amazing amount of distance. Only, almost could be heard on the other side of the earth. Amru, Hechi Navid, what should we do at this point? Dilma Mishmaya Marachme Ale. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu have mercy on this cub that's crying so loud and so continuously. And the Marsha points out that the Yetzer Hara is a divine creation. And maybe if we allow this Yetzer Hara to continue to live, then Hashem will eventually have mercy on it. But on the other hand, we got to destroy it. So what should we do? Do we have the chutzpah to destroy a godly creation? So the Navi Zechariah responds to the people. He says, Shadyu biduda diavara v'kasyua biavra. You take a cauldron that's full of hot lead, and what you do is you put the cub inside this cauldron, the shayef kalye, and you cover the cauldron with a lead covering, and that's meant to absorb the sound. Again, this is all a metaphor, but it means that the cry of the cub should not be heard. Tichsivin, where do we find in Tanakh, meaning in Zechariah Novi, some sort of allusion? Allusion with an A, allusion to this incident. Tichsiv Vayomer Zos Harisha. There's a finger pointing and said, this is the evil one. Vayashlecho saw, and they thrust it El Tocha Eifa, into the Eifa. The Eifa is a cauldron that has a capacity of an Eifa, which is three saw. Vayashleches Even Hoferes Alpia. And they threw a lead stone on the mouth of this cauldron. Amri, so the Anshei Knesset Gedolah said, Ho v'yeis ratzon hu. We see now that this is an opportune moment. Nive rachme ayitzrei de'avera. Maybe at the same time we could destroy the Yetzer Hara for immorality. And boy rachme, as a result of their prayers, imsar biadayu. The Yetzer Hara for znus and arayis was put into their hands, and now they have to make a decision what to do with it. So what do they decide? Chavshu plus a yomi. Let's tie it up and lock it up for 3 days and let's see what's going to happen. This is a famous Gemara, also appears elsewhere in Shas, in Yuma. Iboy biasa bas yoma l'chola. They needed a chick, or the egg of a chick, that was freshly first day laid for an ill person. They couldn't find anywhere in Eretz Yisrael a first day egg. And the Gemara in Yuma explains that the impulse for procreation was completely terminated for both males, females, animals, humans. Hens didn't lay any eggs. And this is all because the evil inclination was taken captive. Amru Hechinavit, so what are we going to do? Basically, they're in a situation of either or. In other words, either they destroy the Yetzer Hara for Arayis, and then thereby destroy the world, basically. Or what should they do? So they raise the following possibility of completely rejecting the boy Palga. Maybe we can weaken the Yetzer Hara to 50% of its power. But the answer is that Palga, and therefore would only be weakened as far as Hirhurei Avera is concerned, but it would still activate the desire for procreation. So Palga Merkia Lo Yahavi, but heaven would not grant such a request to destroy half of the Yetzer Hara. Again, as I said before, it's very difficult to understand this agadah literally and assume that the Yetzer Hara is a physical being. you know, as if we can kill half of it. The whole story here is just an allegory. That's what the Torah Chaim and the Marashah point out. It's a prophetic vision that was seen by the Anshei Knesset HaGedola in the project of destroying the Yetzer Hara for Arayos. And the Gemara says, Kachlinu li'ene, they blinded the eyes of the Yetzer Hara, v'yahani beidlo igra inish b'krovase. They accomplished a great thing, that there would there would be no temptation for a person to have a relationship with his close relatives like his mother or his sister. But for other arayas, the evil inclination is still powerful, like for a nida, or perhaps for an Ashes Ish even. So basically this whole narrative would lead us, if you take it literally, to the implication, to the understanding, the impression that the Yetzer is a physical being. But that's not so. The Yetzer is not physical. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav. Again, we're going back to the question about whether Klal Yisrael actually loved the idols. And Rav Yehuda Omar Rav tells the story, Maisa ben Nochris Achas, a story with a Gentile woman. She was deathly ill. Omar, she made a declaration. She talks about herself in third person. If she can recover from her sickness, is telech, she will go v'tavo l'chol avodah zara shebolam. Again, they were such believers in avodah zara that they felt that this would be a great pledge, that she would seek out, you know, around the world in 80 days and find every single idol and worship it. And then Amda, she actually recovered from her illness. The Avdal Chal Avodah Zarah Shebaolam came and she gave Lipa'ar. So she had worshipped every form of idolatry with the exception of Pa'ar. When she got to Pa'ar, Shala Lekomrim, she asked the priest, Bameh Ovdim Lezu. How do you, you know, it's every idol has its customary mode of worship. How do you worship the Pa'ar? Omrullah, they answered, Ochlin Trudin Vishosim Shechar. You have to eat beets and drink beer, and those are guarantees that you'll have shilshul, umatrizin b'fanel, and you defecate before the idol. So you have to loosen your bowels and then defecate. Omer, she declared, Mutov Shetachzar Ahi Isha L'cholya V'lotavad Avodah Zarah B'kach. She would rather be ill than worship the idol in such a despicable manner. But Atem Beis Yisrael Einom Kein. With regard to the episode of Baal Pa'ar, the Jewish people were willing to worship the Pa'ar in that despicable manner, and it's Mitzmadim LeBaal Pa'ar, the Pasuk says. They attach themselves to the Baal Pa'ar. And this is a story at the end of Sefer Dvar, Bamidbar, in Bamidbar Chafhei, or the middle of Bamidbar, I should say, in terms of the Maisa of Cosby and Pinchas killed the head of the Shevet, of Shevet Shimon, at the time that they were overcome with desire for the Bnos Moav, and they worshipped Avodah Zarah as well. They worshipped Pa'ar, Nitzmadim LeBaal Pa'ar. Now, the Gemara is going to go into a whole discussion about what the word Nitzmadim means. Is it an absolute connection, like Kitzamid Pasil, like a cover that's firmly fastened to a vessel? They used to take a Klei Cheres, and in order to make sure that the cover was absolutely firm and attached, they would put a very strong adhesive kind of a glue to make sure that it would stay down. And that's how connected the Jewish people were, those who worshipped the Baal Pa'ar. And even though the form of worship was so repulsive, so disgusting, nevertheless, that's what they did. And Rabbi Yehuda says that what was the relationship of the good Jews to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? V'atem hadveikim b'Hashem. Okay, it doesn't say nitzmadim. It says dveikim. Rabbi Yehuda understands that dveikim is a lower level of connection. It's clinging to Hashem, but it's not nitzmadim to Hashem. They would adhere to Hashem. Kishtei tmaros advuko zubazo. If you have two dates that are stuck together because they have a sticky outside substance, but you can separate them apart. That's called dveikim. Dates are easily separated. And basically what Rabbi Yehuda says is he's creating a contrast between the Jews who remain loyal to Hashem. They didn't cleave to Hashem with absolute firmness like a nitzmadim. They had bodily desires, and that separated themselves from their religious commitment and loyalty. But on the other hand, you've got the Jews who worship Baal Pa'ar. They were nitzmadim. They want a complete, total connection with the idols and the worship. And we see this from the fact that here a Gentile woman who took a vow that she would worship every single idol in the world, yet she was repulsed by Pa'ar. But the Jews were willing to bow down to Pa'ar, despite this repulsive kind of shilshul. The Masnisa Tana, we learned it a Braisa, Hanitzmadim Lebal Pa'ar. Oh, here's a different view. That Nitzmadim is less connected than Dveikim. Kitzamid Al Yad Ha'isha, like a bracelet on the hand of a woman. You know, it says she's wearing a bracelet, but she can remove the bracelet with ease. But you cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Dvukim Mamish in a way that's inseparable, that the Jewish people have a tighter connection to Hashem than just smoothim. They are Dveikim. So we have machlokes here between Rabbi Yehuda and the Stam of the Braisa as to whether or not the Atem HaDveikim is really speaking in Israel's favor or not to defend them, and saying that those who worship Baal Pa'ar, they had ulterior motives, but they really were devoted to Hashem. Their attachment was simply because of the overwhelming desire that they had for the Moabite women. Tana Rabbana, we learned in the Braisa, Maise Bisabata ben Elos. A certain individual by the name of Sabta, who came from Alas, Shehiskir Chamoro Linochris Achas, and this Jewish fellow named Sabta, he rented out his donkey to a Gentile woman, and he would lead her while she would ride on the donkey. And Kevan Shigia Lipa'ar, they reached this idol, this temple for Pa'ar. Amrlo, she said to him, Hamtein Ache Kones Vietze, wait until I enter the house, and then I'll come back, I'll come out. Liachashi Yotza, Amrlo, so when she came out, so this Jew by the name of Savta said, Af Atamtini, now you too, it's your turn to wait for me, Ache Kones Vietze. I'm going to go into this temple. Amrlo, she said to him, but Valo Yehudi Atiyah, aren't you a Jew? Amrlo, Umay ichpas lech. In other words, as if you, only the goyim have exclusive monopoly rights over worship for Baal Pa'ar. Even if I'm a Jew, what do you care? I'm gonna worship Baal Pa'ar. Nichnas par b'fanov. So he defecated before Pa'ar. V'kinach b'chotmo, and he wiped his backside on the nose of the Baal Pa'ar, meaning this was his act of debasing the idol. However, what he didn't realize was, Bishkoga, that he had actually worshipped the idol. That the way you worship this idol in defecation is to denigrate the idol. And the priests were made fun of him. They said, look how this Jew worshipped the idol. He did the best act of degradation. We never even dreamt of such an act of degradation. So they really, the Jew wanted to degrade the Pa'ar, but they turned it inside out, distorted to make it into a praise, as if the Jew was honoring their idol, their Pa'ar, by doing the most disgusting, degrading act, and the more degrading it is, the greater the service it is to Pa'ar. Again, these are all mind-boggling concepts. But thank God we don't have the Eitz Ha'ar anymore for Avodah Zarah, so we can't really appreciate this, the power of the Eitz Ha'ar and Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara quotes the Mishnah now that we learned over here, and the Mishnah says, HaPo'er Atzmal Baal Pa'ar Reza Avodah, so that is the service, to defecate in front of the Pa'ar. Afal Gavdim HaChavim Libzuyeh. So even though he's degrading the idol, and that's what he wants to do, but that is a service for the idol. So again, on the one hand, the act that he did of degrading the idol was a forbidden act. And under the normal circumstances, he'd be chayev chatos, and if he did it after Eidav Asroi, he'd be chayev misa. But here, the individual, this Sabta, he was not interested in serving the idol by degrading it, just the opposite. He wanted to degrade it. He wanted to debase the idol. So therefore, he's not liable, but he does have to realize that he did a mice of Avodah Zarah. Now, this conclusion that Rashi mentions here, that you're not liable for debasing the idol, if that was your intention, is based on Rava that we had a few blad ago, that Rava says, Oev mi'av v'yira is potur. In other words, the precondition for being chayv in Avodah Zarah is that you accept the deity as a deity and serve the idol and worship it. But here, his intention was to degrade the idol. So this Sabta was potur, he was not liable, he had the din of Rava's Oev mi'av v'yira. But nevertheless, he has to realize that the idol is served through debasement, and the more he debases it, the more he has a superior act of idol worship. So the priests were very excited about the way this Jew worshipped the idol. And therefore, he should have avoided it like at all costs. The Mishnah goes on and says, "Azorek evin l'markulis zui avodos." So in the case of the idol called Markulis, the way they served it is by throwing stones at it. The afal gav de mechavin lemirgamei, even though his intention is to stone this idol, my coolest, but nevertheless, that's the custom, that's the way in which you serve this idol. Rabbi Nasha avika ozil lebei torsa. Rabbi Nasha took a trip that took him through a city called Bei Tarta. Amru lo, and the people told him, avodah zarah hi dekayoch, be careful, there's an Avodah Zarah, an idol that's standing there in Bei Tarta. Shokal Pisa Shodabe. He took a clump of earth, and he threw it at the idol. Again, his intention was to debase the idol. He didn't know exactly who the idol was and what its method of service was. So Amrullah, they said, Markulisi. You don't realize it, but that idol that you threw the earth at was Markulis, and that's the way you serve that idol, by throwing stones and clods at the idol. So again, even though Rav Menashe himself had pure intentions, he really just wanted to debase the idol, and therefore technically he's not liable, but nevertheless it was forbidden to do what he did because the act itself looked like an act of idol service, of worship for the idol, because that's how they worship the idol, by degrading the idol. And when they told them that it was a Markulis, Omar Lahu, Rabbi Menashe said to them, Azorek Evan, it says in the Mishnah, Azorek Evan Markulis Tnan, is therefore I got to undo what I did. Asa Shol Be Midrash, he went to the Beis Medrash and he said, you know, I'd like to do it the best I can to sort of rescind the act that I did. Because Omer lo Azorik Evan Markulis Tnan, what you did is Afakav de Mechavin Lemirgame, even though you intended to debase the idol, nevertheless you actually did that which is forbidden, to stone the idol. And although you might not be liable, but you should know that you did something that's prohibited. He's Omer lo Hu, and he felt very bad. He wanted to do tshuva. Ezel Ishkale, you know, if the clod is stuck to the idol, let me go ahead and remove it, and thereby uproot my form of worship. Amru lo, echad anotla v'echad anosna chayav. Even removing the clump of earth or the stone would be Avodah Zarah. Kol chad v'chad ravcha l'chavrata shavik, because by removing one stone, you're making room for a second stone. And that's part of the idol worship itself. So don't get involved in a further violation. Now the Mishnah analyzes a parsha in Vayikra Yurches called Molech, Umizarcha lo siten lahavir lo molech. You shall not give of your offspring to pass through for Molech, pass through the fires, we'll see soon. Now the Knanim worshipped an icon named Molech, and their method of worship was a ritual in which a child would be presented as a gift to the Molech, and then pass through fire. The Mishnah, back on Daf Nun Gimel, has this as a list of one of the Chiyuvei Skila. The Mishnah now addresses the details of this particular Avera, this particular Avodah Zorah. No saying Mizaro LaMolech, Eino Chayv Ad SheYimsar LaMolech VeYavir Ba'esh. There are two preconditions to being Chayav for this Lo Sitein LaAvir LaMolech. Number one, it requires Mesira LaMolech. He has to hand over the child to the priests of Molech. And number two, the Yavir Ba'esh. And the child has to be actually, Lamaisa, has to be burnt by passing through the fire. But Masa LaMolech V'lo Ever Ba'esh, if he handed over his child to Molech, but his child never passed through the fire for whatever reason, Hevir Ba'esh V'lo Masa LaMolech, the child passed through the fire, but he was not handed over to Molech. Eino chayev. There's no chivat sheyimso LaMolech v'yaver beish. So you need both conditions. He hands over the child to Molech, and the child is passed through the fire. Again, it's not clear whether the father has to take his child and pass him through the fire, or the priests do that on behalf of the father. The Gemara now goes back to the Mishnah on Daf Nun Gimel. K'toni avodah zorah, k'toni molech. From the fact that the Mishnah lists molech as a separate category, implying that it's not avodah zorah itself. Om Rabbi Ovin, t'nan k'man diomar, molech lav avodah zorah. This would support the opinion that maintains that the rite or the ritual of molech is not a form of idol worship, which means that if one, for example, would worship an idol through slaughtering or burning, and then at the same time he would do the rite of Molech, then he'd be chayv shtayim. And if it was b'shogeg, he'd have to bring two chatos. Or, for example, if one violates an idol service such as slaughtering or burning to Molech, he would not be chayv. Because with regard to Molech, the kedarko is to offer his child. Okay. Now the Gemara quotes a brisa, the Sanya, we learned in the brisa, Echad la molech vi echad la shara avodah zarah, chayav. If a person would offer two of his children, one for Molech and one to another idol, he's chayav. And Rabbi Lezer Reb Shimon Omer, La Molech Chayev Shalom La Molech Potur. Only for Molech is there a Chiyuv of Mavir Bonov. But as far as other idols are concerned, Shalom La Molech, that is not the Derech, the kedarka of that avodah zorah, and therefore he's not liable for that. So let's just review. The machlokas in the braisa is that Tanakama holds that molech is idolatry. And once you define the molech, you know, where you bring your child, chasham, for this thing, as avodah zorah, then it applies even to shaar avodah zorah, to other idols, other icons. And he's chayef, Rebbe Lozor, Reb Shimon, on the other hand, holds that Molech is not an idol worship, and therefore it's a separate lav of being Maver Bonav, which only applies to Molech, and it doesn't apply for any other Avodah Zarah. So, according to Tanakama, the Halach of Molech sets up an absolute form of idol worship that applies to any idol, even if that idol is not normally served in that way. It's served in a different way. And basically, according to the Tanakhama, According to the Tanakhama, since this Avodah Zarah of Molech is idolatry, it's included under the general prohibition of idolatry in Dvarim Perek Yud Beis. And that law forbids serving the idol in its unique fashion, but now we're saying that Maver Bonov is considered a, in and of itself, a form of Avodah Zarah, and therefore it applies to any idol. But Rabbi Elezer Reb Shimon has a different logic. He says if the rite of Molech is really Avodah Zarah, then the Torah didn't have to specifically forbid it because it would fall under the prohibition of imitating the nations in serving their gods the way they serve it. From the fact that the Torah sets up a special law for being Maver Bonav L'Molech, it means that this in and of itself is not considered idolatry, but rather this is a form of, we'll call it, for lack of a better word, sorcery, and it's done for the Molech. So the prohibition applies only to offering one's children to an icon named Molech, but not to any other idol. That's the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon. Omar Abayi, Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon, Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos, Amru Dover Echad. We can find the same approach, the same opinion, as that of Rabbi Elazar in Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos. Rabbi Eliezer, Rav Shimon Odomar, we already mentioned Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos, Desanya, we learned in a braisa, Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos, Ben Antignos, Omer, Mipnei Ma Tofsa Torah Loshan Molech. In other words, the word Molech is Miloshan Melech, or Molech. So you're describing an idol as a molech, as if it controls or it kings, it rules over. Kol shem lichu alehem. It means we're not limited to any specific object or material that's called a molech. If you accept upon yourself any object as your melech, as your sovereign God, that becomes molech. Afilu tsrar, afilu kisam, even a pebble, even a twig. Whatever object is given that title of molech, then if you mavir bonav, if you present your child for that object, that is considered a violation of this law. And therefore, Rav Chanina says that the object has to be accepted as a ruler, as a melech, not as a deity. He's not talking about molech as an avodah zarah. And in that sense, he agrees with the opinion of Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon. Rava Amar, Molech Arai Ika Benai. What is the difference, despite their similarities, what is the difference between Reb Shimon and Rav Chanina? And Nafkamina is going to be a temporary ruler. So if you're like Rav Chanina ben Antignos, you're going to be chayev for this right, even in the case of a pebble or a twig, which he considers a ruler, even though the pebble, the twig, is not worthy of being granted the title ruler on a permanent basis, but it's a ruler on a temporary basis, and therefore becomes molech. But according to Rabbi Elazar, who says that he's only chayev if he does this ritual for an avodah zarah that's permanently established as a ruler, but not if for the moment you establish a pebble or a twig as a ruler. And here we turn to Daf Samach Dalet Amid Beis. Omer Rav Yanai, Eino Chayev Ad Shim Serenu L'Mishar Se Avodah Zarah. The precondition, as we saw in the Mishnah, is Mesira. You have to take your child and hand them over to the priests of Molech. Shenemar U'Mizarecha Lo Siten Lahavir L'Molech. Don't give your offspring to pass before Molech. So the implication is the father gives the child over to the stewards, over to the priests, in order to be passed through the fire. And the priest himself is the one who passes the child through the fire. Okay, Rabbi Osai, we'll stop here. Mitzvah Shem, continue the next year.